A Life of Jesus by Brother Melba Perkis. Book 4, Chapter 4, The First Leper. Standing on ground consecrated by the communion of Jesus with his Father, the disciples pointed back towards Capernaum, where the crowds were once more gathering. Already some of the people had heard that he was missing, and had followed Peter and the others into the hills. "Lord," said Peter, "all men seek for thee." But Jesus did not return. He led his disciples away from the town towards the surrounding villages. "Let us go into the next towns, that I may preach there also, for therefore came I forth." This apparently sudden decision to leave Capernaum may have been one of the results of his prayer. It may have been that when Jesus stood at the door of Simon's house the previous evening and saw the multitudes of sick awaiting his gracious touch, he realized that a crisis had arisen. The all-important mission of Israel's Messiah was not to be a wonder worker. His power, manifested at this moment in healing, was subservient to his greater work of revealing the truths of his Father's kingdom and rendering to him the complete obedience which would make that kingdom a reality. The miraculous works which accompanied his preaching were to be a witness to all men that God had sent him. That they were so largely concentrated upon the alleviation of human suffering is both a revelation of God's love in Jesus and an earnest of the day when Christ's work shall be fully accomplished, when, as described by John in memorable words, "there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away." If the present emphasis continued, the mission of Christ would fail. Men's temporal needs would be abundantly met, but their realization of a far greater salvation would be lost. In this crisis concerning the work, Jesus sought the solitudes, and it may well be that the decision to go further afield was conveyed to him by his Father. It was a development which could only have a beneficial effect upon the people of Capernaum, allowing time for the excitement to evaporate, and giving them the opportunity of considering his works in the light of his words to them in the synagogue. Thus began the first of a number of circuits from Capernaum into the populous regions of Galilee. It was the commencement of an almost unbelievable period of popularity. Jesus had captured the imagination of the people. His name and power were spoken of in every household. Men flocked to him from all parts of Palestine and beyond to hear him. The multitudes grew to such proportions that it became a physical impossibility for him to address them in the narrow, winding streets of the towns. He was forced to lead them out onto the hillsides and into the deserts. As he approached, he drew the people from their villages for miles around, and they converged upon him from all directions, leaving only the oldest inhabitants to guard their possessions. Caravans travelling along the roads of Galilee during those months must have been subjected to many delays. Roman officials and men of affairs must have made many irate inquiries concerning the slowness of the progress and the reason for the great concourse of people. But in their haste to reach him, there would be few detailed explanations. The impatient travellers would have time to reflect upon the name which was on everyone's lips, Jesus of Nazareth, Jesus of Nazareth. There were many sick people jostled in the milling crowds. They came borne on improvised beds, on asses, often on primitive carts. Parents carried their blind and infirm children. Class distinctions were temporarily suspended, as rich and poor, free man and slave, Pharisee and tax collector mingled together and searched towards the place where Jesus had chosen to preach and to heal. Even an occasional leper could be seen hesitating a few yards beyond the outmost fringe of the crowd, the lower part of his face covered, but his eyes revealing his heart-rending desire to be seen by the healer and cleansed. We read so often the gospel accounts of the healing of the sick, that we may possibly forget to pause and meditate upon this great beneficent work of Jesus. Can we see this mother, with her blind little daughter in her arms, struggling to get near to Jesus, crying hysterically because her efforts are frustrated by the burly, selfish men who impede her? Can we see her finally reach him, breathless and crushed, but full of triumphant faith? She eagerly lifts her arms to let him take her burden from her. She watches his sensitive fingers caress the sightless eyes. She sees his own eyes close in prayer. And when they open, it is to smile a welcome into the bright little eyes that look for the first time upon the world that until this moment had only been heard and touched. The mother cannot speak. She can hardly see him through the mist of tears. But he understands. He smiles and blesses her before he turns away to heal once more. Day after day, these simple, moving episodes were repeated in hundreds of families. Men and women came to him pale and emaciated. They went away glowing with health. Pitiable maniacs were brought to him struggling and shouting. They left his presence with inward peace. There were some hideously revolting sights, but he quietly ministered and restored, never impatient, never too tired. And throughout this gracious ministry, Jesus preached the things of the kingdom. The miracles he wrought had a direct bearing on his teaching. He had come to proclaim salvation, to invite men to turn to God and receive the adoption of sons. He prepared men's minds for the time when under his hand the whole earth would be filled with the glory of his Father. In a very real sense, the kingdom of God was at hand. He was the king. His obedience unto death was to set the seal to God's purpose. The precepts which he taught were the principles upon which the kingdom would be governed. Each miracle he wrought over disease and death was a symbol of the final abolition of sin and the final victory over death. Each mastery over the powers of nature was an earnest of the day when all the ends of the earth will remember and turn to the Lord, and he shall be governor among the nations. This thought is wonderfully expressed in the 103rd Psalm, when the words of the psalmist can apply equally to the coming of the Man of Sorrows and the coming of the Lion of the tribe of Judah as King of the whole earth. Bless the Lord, O my soul, cries the inspired psalmist, and forget not all his benefits, who forgiveth all thine iniquities, who healeth all thy diseases, who redeemeth thy life from destruction, who crowneth thee with loving kindness and tender mercies. Those who respond to the teaching of Jesus become children of the kingdom. In obeying his commandments, they practice the principles of his kingdom. They can only look for persecution and sacrifice in their mortal life, because like their Lord, their kingdom is not of this age. They live and die in the confidence that the day of the Lord is coming, and with it the full realization of all their hopes. In his teaching, Jesus therefore concentrated upon the spiritual qualifications which were necessary in all those who desire to be children of his kingdom. His teaching, as well as his miracles, set all Galilee in motion. We have only a glimpse of the things he said, but it is sufficient to make us understand why men and women flocked to hear him. His words were simple, so that a child could understand them. Yet they searched the inmost recesses of men's hearts. He illustrated his teaching by vivid pictures of the familiar scene around him. The sky, the birds of the air, the animals of the field, the sower and the ploughman, the vineyards and the husbandman, all made their unique contribution to his message of life. Nor was the intimate domestic scene forgotten, drawn from his own experience and his observation of how men lived. The oven and the candlestick, the leaven and the salt, the clothes and the family dishes were woven into the rich and colourful pattern of his teaching. He revealed, too, an intimate knowledge of the religious, political, and social background, and many were the scenes given a new meaning to shed light on some spiritual truth. listening to him as he sat in their midst, his hearers had their eyes opened, and for the first time they would see beyond the limits of their daily life to the far horizons of God's everlasting love and purpose. No longer would Yahweh be to them as remote as he is omnipotent. His son revealed him as a father, intimately concerned in the welfare of his children, knowing their needs before they ask, yet desiring them to lift their faces to him, as a parent finds joy in the upturned face of a child. He spoke to them of the great things that his father had determined to do in the earth, of the day when all creation would unite in a paean of praise and worship, when the discord, the suffering and the hardships of the present would melt away, peace and joy would reign, and death itself would be swallowed up in life. He showed them how they could prepare themselves for that day by humility, self-discipline, and above all, a responsive love that found expression in their attitude to one another. He had complete understanding of the difficulties of the task he had set them, but he assured them that they were not fighting a lone battle. With his help, they would win through to victory. Looking into his earnest face and feeling the authority of his words, his hearers began to see the kind of men and women they could become. When we think of the inspiring effect of Christ's words on us, the resolutions they draw from us, the insight they give us into the resources that are at our command, reaching us as they do through the comparatively cold medium of the printed word, we can form some conception of the profoundly moving influence they would have upon those who heard them from the lips of the living Lord. It was on this tour of Galilee from Capernaum that we have the first record of a leper coming to Jesus. The fact of his approach is an arresting commentary upon the gracious ministry of Jesus. Lepers were particularly anxious to avoid rabbis, or any that had the power to enforce the rigorous code of prohibitions which kept them separated from society. A leper was an outcast, spending his living death in the ruins and caves of the desert and the countryside. His hair was dishevelled, his clothes rent, and the lower half of his face covered. Although he was not allowed within the walls of a city, a special provision was made for him to worship in the smaller synagogues. But it was in a place apart, and he had to arrive before the first worshipper, and was not allowed to leave until the last had gone. No one was permitted to acknowledge a leper, or stand within 6 feet of him. No other disease could have more effect.